Before we start, we'd like for you to forget everything that went on today or last night or things that's supposed to happen tomorrow because, you know, we're trying to make our own little world right here. At least give us that.
Hi, I'm Damien, and today we're going to be taking an intimate look at one of rock's most outrageous and original guitar heroes. We'll be hearing Jimmy's music, much of it music that's never before been available for broadcast. Alternate takes from his studio sessions, rare recordings of his club dates and concerts, acoustic jams taken directly from his own archives, and we'll be hearing from his fellow musicians.
The effect he had on English musicians, not just guitarists, but all musicians, was just phenomenal.
His friends.
He was such a nice guy. I mean, he really was a nice guy. He was interesting, he was articulate, intelligent. And above all, he was artistic.
His family.
I raised him more or less myself there.
And even from Jimmy himself, the man who redefined the electric guitar as we know it.
Every time we come into town, everybody always look towards us for some kind of answer of what's happening to them, you know. And which is a good feeling, but it's very hard. So therefore, I have to live the life. You know, I have to witness all these bad scenes and all these good scenes. So then I can say, well, what I found out, you know, instead of just reading books and all that. So therefore, I'm going to get all these words together in nice, heavy songs, very straightforward songs, you know, in this saga too.
Rediscover Jimi Hendrix. Jimi Hendrix in all his glory, preaching at the altar of his electric church. Jimi Hendrix, shattering notes and shaping sound to suit his own celestial visions. Jimi Hendrix, live and unreleased. Was a wartime wedding. A wedding that might have never happened at all if Al Hendrix hadn't gotten drafted that spring. But things change when you're going off to war. So Al and 16-year-old Lucille Jeter, dance partners and local jitterbug champs, got married in Seattle in March of 1942. And in November, Lucille gave birth to a boy. She named him Johnny Allen Hendrix. And she relied on friends and relatives to care for him. A California family that knew the Jeters well offered to take Lucille's boy on a road trip. They brought him to a housing project in Berkeley. And that's where Al found him in 1945 after he finally got his discharge from the Army. Al took his three-year-old son back to Seattle, changed his name to James Marshall Hendrix, and eventually bought him his first guitar.
I used to notice that where we stayed at, I used to have him clean up the bedroom all the time while I was gone. And when I come home, I find a lot of broom straws around the foot of the bed. I asked him, I said, well, didn't you sweep the floor? He said, oh, yeah, he did. But I found out later he used to be sitting at the foot of the bed there strumming the broom like he's playing the guitar. And then there was a friend of mine, he had this acoustic guitar he wanted to sell for $5. So Jimmy told me about it, and I thought, okay. I gave him the money. He strummed away on that, and he used to be working away on that all the time. Any spare time he had, he used to be playing the guitar.
Mm-hmm. Jimi Hendrix, an unreleased solo jam recorded on his portable tape deck in early 1968. Now, after Al Hendrix came home, he and Lucille got back together, just long enough to produce a second son named Leon. But the marriage didn't take, and Jimmy spent most of the next 10 years being shuffled between relatives in Vancouver and his father in Seattle. It was always his music, of course.
Well, he played with various groups, teenage dances and parties and what have you, things like that.
And his dreams, the dreams of a lonely and often unhappy child.
There's some dreams you never forget. Like my mother was being carried away on this camel, and it was a big caravan. She's saying, well, I'm going to see you now. And she's going under these trees. You can see the shade, you know, the leaf patterns across her face, but she's going under this, you know, like that. And she's saying, well, I won't be seeing you too much anymore, you know, so I'll see. And then about 2 years after that, she died, you know. And I said, Pierre, where are you going though, like that? You know, I remember that. I always really remember that.
After his mother's death in 1958, Jimmy became increasingly isolated and withdrawn. He dropped out of school. And then after a run-in with the law when he was 18, he joined the Army. And he got himself shipped off to Fort Campbell, Kentucky, home of the 101st Airborne Division, the famous Screaming Eagles. America was between wars in 1961. Jimmy was too late for Korea and too early for Vietnam, but he was still proud to be a paratrooper, proud of the Eagles, and proud of the fact that he made it through jump school.
Oh, well, the first jump was really out of sight, like you're in the plane. You know, some cats has never been in the plane before. Some people were throwing up in the, you got a big bucket, you know, a big garbage can in the middle. It's great. At the beginning, the plane is going, just roaring and shaking. You can see the rivets just jumping around, talking about, what am I doing here? A split second, a thought went through me like, you're crazy. And then all of a sudden, it just disappeared. And it was almost like blank, and it was almost like a crying, and you want to laugh and pat the sergeant on the back and say, who's this joking with me, Sarge? But you know, and all the time, you know, you say, what the hell am I doing here? And all, by that time, you're just there at the door, and all of a sudden, you know, this plop, rush, and all of a sudden, then you're up like that, and then you just, whoa.
And so Jimmy jumped out of planes by day, and at night, he recreated the rush of air, the swooping, swirling, gut-wrenching, stomach-churning sensation of soaring through space on his guitar, a treasured red Dan Electro named Betty Jean in honor of his Seattle sweetheart. Most of the other recruits at Fort Campbell found Jimi Hendrix pretty weird. They couldn't understand his devotion to Betty Jean or his habit of wandering around the base picking at an air guitar when the real thing wasn't handy. But that kind of behavior seemed perfectly normal to Billy Cox, who formed a combo with Jimmy called the Casuals.
See, I don't think I was going to my company, and I had to pass service club number one on the way. I heard his guitar playing inside. I said, wow. So the cat's all right. So I stopped in and I introduced myself to him. And told him I played bass. I went and checked out a bass. We started jamming right off.
Even the gigs at the local roadhouses couldn't make the Army bearable. And by the summer of 62, Jimmy had maneuvered his way out of the service.
I pretended that I hurt my back, you know, and I really did break my ankle, so I got out like that, you know. So I started playing around all over the South. You know, we had a band in Nashville, Tennessee. And I got tired of playing in that because, you know, they don't want to move anywhere. They just want to stay there. So I started traveling around. I went to New York and won first place in the Apollo Amateur Contest, you know, $25. So I stayed up there, starved up there for about 2 or 3 weeks. And then I got the Isley Brothers,
yeah.
I went to Twist and Shout. Asked if I'd like to, play with them. So I played with them for a while.